now that we have discussed sensory and short-term memory, we would now exclusively focus on long-term memory. Long-term memory basically refers to the fact that the information is stored for a very, very long period of time. Remember, the terminal duration for short-term memory was 30 seconds. So, if you are able to store the information and retrieve it even after the lapse of 30 seconds time, that means the information has now traveled to the long-term storage. In terms of sensory memory and short-term memory, we did talk about the capacity. What would be the maximum capacity of this specific memory type? We said, you know, 11 to 16 items in the case of iconic memory. Similarly, we said that fine, even if you try to chunk the information, at maximum of 40 bits of information can be stored in short term storage. In terms of long term storage, there is nothing like the maximum possible limit of the long term storage. So, unlimited storage for any period of time, that is the most vital thing about long term storage, long term memory. Now, long term memory can be of two types, declarative memory and procedural memory, and declarative memory can also be divided into semantic and episodic memory. And further, episodic memory can be specified as specific memory and autobiographical memory. Based on the discussion that we had till now, and if you add a little more to what you saw right now, we primarily divide memory into sensory register, short term storage and long term storage. Sensory memory, we talked about iconic and echoic memory, and we did refer to haptic memory, saying that it is mostly iconic and echoic memory that has been researched well, and therefore, we talked about it at length. Within short term memory, we also had a discussion about the working memory. Now, long term memory, you can divide it into declarative and procedural memory. This we will come to it little later. The other, when you look at memory in terms of semantic memory, episodic memory and autobiographical memory. Further, episodic memory can be divided into prospective and retrospective memory. What we would do right now is that we will start with episodic memory, and then we will move towards different other types of long term memory that we are looking at in the chart right now. Canadian psychologist Stelving was the first to make the distinction between episodic memory and semantic memory. Now, if you look at the way information is stored and the way the information is recollected, you will find very interesting thing about human beings. We have very good memory for language. We have very good memory for music. We also have very good memory for voice. Okay. Now, memory of language would primarily mean the storage of the meaning rather than the sound. In terms of music, information pertaining to contours and pitch interval, both are found to be retained in our long term storage. And of course, in terms of voice, a reasonably good voice recognition is possible for us when we come across familiar people, but for strangers we do not have such good voice memory. Say for instance, if you hear the calling sound of your parents, if you hear the calling sound of one of your siblings, okay, you would very easily find out, recognize just on the basis of the voice that this is the calling sound of my father or my mother or my brother or my sister, okay, because we have a very good memory for the voice of familiar people. Listen to this very music. Look at the clip to see an actual attempt by a child to memorize a poem.
Roll your hands, listen to the music, roll your hands, listen to the music, roll your Stamp your feet.
Stamp your feet.
Stamp your feet.
Stamp your feet.
Listen to the music. Stamp your feet.
Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Listen to the music. Stamp your feet.
Jump up high.
Jump up high.
Jump
up high. Listen to the music. Jump up high.
The video that you saw right now presented, you know, a mother making her child learn to sing a nursery rhyme. Now, child was basically picking up the contours, okay, and he was trying to copy the melody even though the exact word was not known to him. And this was of course, meaningful for the mother, but it had no meaning for the child except for he was enjoying the music, the rhythm that he was trying to imitate. Now, after the lapse of this episode, when the child was grown and the mother was asked to narrate some of the significant moments that she remembers about her own child, okay, she could exactly remember the words that this child used to use. She especially had a recollection about this very episode, wherein she said, "Know that how the child used to sing and what type of words he used to use and how he used to repeat, imitate the rhyme." Okay. So, this is a fantastic thing about the human memory system, that we have very good recollection of the voices, the music, the language, and depending on the personal significance of these issues, our memory becomes very, 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 very good for these episodes. Now, episodic memory represents experiences and it is basically a memory of events, but these events are recollected in a serial form. It is just like a television serial which is broken into several episodes. So, we have the record of our past experience. Okay. And all these daily experiences of the past, they are broken into episodes. Therefore, it is called as episodic memory. So, when you recollect, you say, I still remember my first day in school. I still remember when I delivered the first lecture on camera. Okay. These are episodic memory. Episodic memory basically also is the factual information that is acquired at a specific time. So, remember, time plays an important role here, it becomes an anchor here. Therefore, episodic memory is more susceptible to forgetting as compared to semantic memory, because in the case of semantic memory, it is the meaningfulness that is given at most importance, whereas in the case of episodic memory, it is the fact at a specific time that is given importance. Okay. Therefore, even in terms of recollection, we do commit certain errors. Right now, we will see one of those examples. If one is asked to recollect and reproduce facts related to a particular event that had happened at a specific time period, we do go ahead with distorting it. So, part of it is recollection, but we realize that whole lot of distortion does take place in recollection of episodic memory. One form of episodic memory is called eyewitness memory. It is called eyewitness because it has forensic importance. Okay. You must have heard this word, that there is somebody who acts as a witness in the court of law. So, you provide an evidence, okay. You endorse of the happening of something. Okay. Therefore, it is called that you are testifying it, you are becoming a witness to it. So, when recollection of the information, okay, which is basically an episode at a specific time period, if it serves the forensic purpose, then it is called eyewitness memory. And of course, because it is one of the forms of episodic memory, so it is also vulnerable to distortion. Usually,
the verbal report of the event might even interfere with the visual recall of the event. So, what you visually recall when you replay the event, the sequence, and when you verbally translate it to report it, there could be little bit of an interference effect there itself. Look at this very image on your screen. Imagine you are standing at one of the locations on the road and you see collision between two cars. Okay. Usually, if two cars are moving at a very high speed, the overall time that the entire process of collision will take place would be fraction of seconds. Not even 1 second would be complete when this car will actually come and hit each other, and whatever had to happen would happen. Now, imagine yourself that you are standing at a specific location from where you saw this accident. Okay? So, focus yourself on the screen right now. See what actually gets distorted. Okay? Now, after the lapse of a certain period of time, you are asked to recollect what you actually saw. Now, you see, when you construct, when you mentally replay the story, what you saw was this, okay, but when you mentally replay it, you add certain flavor to it. Okay. Now, all these arrows show, these are the additions that you have made, okay, so as to suit the recollection, make it much more accurate. But while trying your best to make the story far more accurate, actually what you have done is that you have distorted it. Okay. This is an interesting aspect of eyewitness memory. November 26, 2008 would always be remembered in the history of India because of what is called as Mumbai attack or 26/11, when Hotel Taj, one of the sites in Bombay, became the target of terrorist attack. Now that this episode took place in Hotel Taj, let us look at this event from two viewpoints: an NSG commando who participated in this event, okay, in the anti-terrorist movement operation that was held in Hotel Taj, how he recollects the information, and somebody who was part of it and got a chance to come out of the hotel, how he recollects the information, okay. This is pure demonstration of episodic memory. That specific time when you were in Hotel Taj performing the commando operation, okay, what happened to you? Listen to this.
29-year-old Sunil Kumar Yadav, an NSG commando, belongs to Patodi in Haryana.
27 ki shaam ko na parli side wali roke andar se usne darwaza khola militant ne aur ek spray maar diya. और मेरे को पीछे से ना ब्रस्ट लगा, दो तो बटक में लग गया था और बीपी जैकेट के ऊपर से क्रॉस हो गए वो.
मिस्टर अमित, द मैनेजर ऑफ शामियाना रेस्टोरेंट इन होटल ताज, आल्सो वाज अ विटनेस ऑफ दिस एपिसोड. ओके, हिज एपिसोडिक रिकलेक्शन वैरीज फ्रॉम द रिकलेक्शन ऑफ द कमांडो होम यू हर्ड राइट नाउ, बिकॉज ऑल्दो टाइम वॉज द सेम, the episode that was taking place for Amit was different from what took place for the commando. Listen to what Amit had to say later on.
The moment he turns to the Shamiana and I started firing, and I realized that he's not going to spare anybody now, I have to do something, and he threw a hand grenade and it blasted in the middle of the restaurant. The people on the other side of the restaurant, they managed to escape from the service entrance, but I had around 30 people, 23 guests, 7 staff on the other side of the restaurant where there is no other way. Somewhere I recollected that there is a door at the poolside which opens into the transformer room of the hotel. And from there it goes out. So I asked the guests to evacuate fast as possible. That point of time I noticed that there was a foreigner, a huge foreigner, a 6 feet 6 inch tall guy. He was shot in his arm and was bleeding very badly. And there was a couple who was crying. They told me like, my 10-year-old son has gone to toilet just 3 minutes or 2 minutes before this thing started. I want to get my son. And I was very scared and I had a concern. So I said, ma'am, don't worry, I'll get your son. Because one reason is I never wanted her to go out. Probably there is every possibility she dying. And secondly, she disclosing the location where the 30 people are hiding. So I went outside, there's a corridor. I was at one end and the terrorist was on the other end. So he looked at me, he started shooting. So I screamed and I tried to move away from there. He threw a hand grenade on me. I still have that noise, you know. It bounced right behind me, just 3 feet distance. I jumped, screamed and I jumped. And I knew that point of time I'm gonna be dead. But my luck was so strong that hand grenade never blasted. I came back. I told the couple that your son is going to be fine, trust me. Meanwhile, this person started bleeding very heavily. My boss came, he opened the door. We came out of a transformer room. Immediately, a cop's van was stopped. We took the guest to bomb the hospital. You know, whatever my life, the Wednesday on was 26 onwards, is all grace life. I always take it as I was dead on 26.
Besides Hotel Taj, CST station in Bombay also was one of the sites where the terrorists had attacked and killed lot many innocent people. Sebastian D'Souza, the photojournalist, was available at that time. He was present there. He clicked numerous photographs and it was through the lens of Sebastian D'Souza that next morning a whole lot of Indians they realized what actually happened at CST station. Now, when Sebastian D'Souza was taken back to CST station and was asked to recollect the episode that took place that evening, this is what he had to say.
News photographer Sebastian D'Souza, the photo editor of Mumbai Mirror, takes us through that journey.
What really happened and how did you take those pictures that day?
Yeah, it was somewhere around 9:30. We heard some loud explosions. The whole terminus was, you know, empty. But there was loud sounds of, you know, gunfire and granite blasting. And when I looked towards the exit of the local train terminus, it was the terrorists there. I saw, when I peeped out, I saw two guys in backpack. And they didn't look like terrorists. The young guys, as if they were going out on a trip or something. But no sooner, the constable fired. He fired from his 303 from here. Yeah, they returned fire. What the two terrorists did was one went on the other side, one came from here. So I went into the next train. As he came out, I took my pictures. I got my pictures, I again hid myself. Both of them met. They spoke something, I don't know what. One of them dropped the bag. I tried to get a glimpse of them. These guys had turned around and were heading to the rear of the train. So I said, this is not good for me. I got out of the train, came back to this spot where they had done all the shooting, destruction. I saw all the policemen who were with me dead. I was very cautious because if I had done something hastily like what they did, I would have died.
Perhaps you didn't get a chance to really see them because
I just kept shooting. There were many out shaken, you know. That means there was a slight fright in me too because of the gunshots and all that. And most of the time I was trying to avoid they seeing me. Very quick glimpses I got of them. That's why I kept trailing them for more pictures.
We are taking lot many examples because we want to understand how episodic memory works. Remember one thing, we have discussed that it is time specific. Two, we have discussed that it is event specific. So event anchored to a given time, okay, and then you store it because of the significance that you attribute to it. These are all rare examples, no? the example of terrorist attack that we took, all of them were rare. One such rare experience I'll also like to show it to you. On 22nd May 2010 at 6:30 in the morning, Air India Express flight 812 from Dubai to Bangalore met an accident at Bangalore International Airport. Only 8 passengers survived. 2 of them later on recollected their experience. Look at this.
दुबई से 1:15 में और इधर उतरा 6:20 में.
6:20 में
हाँ.
क्या हुआ वहाँ
वो रनवे में उतरे का उतने का टाइम मैंने गिर गया. फ्लाइट शेख होकर सीधे ब्रेक मारा का पहले मारने के बाद में बिल्डिंग फटाफट मार दिया. मार गया और टाइम में फायर हो गया पूरा फट गया.
वो नीचे कैसे गया उतना दूर जाके कैसे गिरा?
बाद में इनका ब्रेक मारना ना इसका मारने का टाइम नीचे गिर गया. बिल्डिंग के पास मारा देखा हम सही.
तुम अकेले थे?
हम पैसेंजर हमारे हम अकेले.
तुम्हारे साथ कितने आदमी और बाहर आ गए?
बाकी हम 4-5 आदमी हम देखा.
हम लोग आने का टाइम है ना नीचे उतारने का टाइम. नीचे उतारा थोड़ा फ्लाइट फिर एक साइड से गया फिर से इधर भी जाके मारा फ्लाइट. वो टाइम आग आ गया हम लोग नीचे गिर गया. फिर थोड़ा ऊपर थोड़ा जगह हम लोग देखा उधर से हम लोग भाग गया बाहर. फिर थोड़ा जंगल था साइड में उधर से बाहर आया तो उधर एक रेलवे ट्रैक था उधर तक हम लोग आया कैसा उधर से आदमी लोग हम लोग लाके इधर. हाँ 5 आदमी था.
Now, what you actually saw here was amazing. The way the two passengers who had a very narrow escape, who defeated death, could actually recollect the tilt of the flight, the jerk that they felt when the flight did hit the ground, and what actually happened. They were sitting inside the flight and they visualized, they recreate the whole sequence of events. What actually would have happened there? Okay, these are examples of episodic memory, and of course, these were all examples we all know because they were historic events from the history point of view. But you recollect your own life experience, and you would realize that you have thousands and thousands of such episodic recollections because you provide certain specific significance to it. Therefore, the whole lot of factors they affect episodic memory. First one, of course, is the significance of the event. Besides that, amount and space of practice. How much amount of practice has actually gone into storing this very information? Okay, if you have practiced something more and more, okay, the chances are that you would recollect it better. If there are competing events, temporally. Two significant events take place at the same time, what is the temporal gap between the first and the second event? That would also play a role. If both are equally significant and temporally there is not much of a difference, there could be an interference. If there is a distribution pattern, one event took place at this time, the other event took place little later, then you get time and space. Okay. To practice this information and reserve it in the episodic memory. Second very important thing is the type of processing. Okay. You heard Mr. Amit right now when he said towards the end of his interview that the life after 26/11 is a grace period for him. This is how he interprets. So, how do you process the experience? That is important. Okay. The way you process will decide how much of how much of recollection you will have and the level of accuracy with which you will be able to recollect the information. Three and more important is also the fact that how do you queue the information that you are storing. It is equivalent to something like giving a file name when you save a file in your PC. Okay. Say for example, if I have an event. Okay, say for example, today's date, I give it as a file name and I know that my search will always be using the date. So, if I have to find out what happened at this point in time, I just search for the file name that has to do with this date. There could be a situation if I give file name, not by date but by event. Okay. So, if I have a seminar, whether I have a class, whether I am going for some other invited talk, I give different file names. Okay. Similarly, say I am sure when you store photographs on your PC, you create a folder and you give name to the folder. So, say for example, if you have gone to say any tourist place, say you went to Agra, you make a folder named Agra. You came to Kanpur and you give a folder named Kanpur. Okay. Photographs of Agra are stored in the folder Agra, photographs of Kanpur are stored in the folder named Kanpur. And this is a relevant cue that you are giving to yourself, because next time if you have to look at the photographs that you clicked in Agra, you will go for the folder which has the name Agra. So, all episodes, okay, whether it is the code that you give is the time, and you say I remember when I was at CST station in the evening at this time waiting for this very train, okay, which has the departure time at this say 6 o'clock, okay, and 5:58 was the time when this accident took place, when this episode took place. Okay. So, this works as a retrieval cue. Better and more efficient the retrieval cue, far more better it would be and convenient it would be for you to recollect the event. Also, the information, the recollection will be very, very accurate, because retrieval cue is correct. Of course, we have been talking about significance. So, episodic memory is bound to be context dependent. Okay. In which context did this happen? Okay. So, when you recollect the information, in what context are you trying to recollect the information? So, if there is a match in the context in which it was stored and in which you are trying to retrieve, more and more is the match between the context, higher is the probability that you would recollect it better. And of course, besides context, it is also the state which plays a role. Okay. So, retrieval of episodic memory is also state dependent. In what mood state you were, okay, when you experience this. So, you were at a given point in time on the station when the terrorist attack took place, and when you recollect the experience, it is also the state in which you are. Okay. So, the emotional arousal that you experienced at that time, later on when you are about to you are told to recollect, your emotional arousal also plays an important role. Okay. Experience, the emotional experience at that time and emotional experience at this point in time, okay, how charged you were there at that point in time and how charged you are at this point in time. If these two overlaps, okay, it will work as a fantastic retrieval cue. Okay. So, what we have discussed? Event specific, time specific. So, event at a given time, okay, recollected as one segment, forms the episodic memory. Okay, we have seen good number of examples of episodic memory. The time of practice, the space between two events that takes place, how much of processing, how we try to store the information, the file name that we try to give, and of course, the state and the context in which the event happened and in which the recollection is being made. So, these are the prominent factors that affects episodic memory.